Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful, beautiful, and fantastic Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, a Solartopia song on the Tomorrow's Children album with the Rivertown Kids from Apple Core. Is it Apple Core? Apple Plus? Apple Something Records. I'll figure it out by the end of the show. This is Harvey Wasserman back for another Solartopia Green Power. And well, on the show, I've got two spectacular guests today, Jeanette Sherman and Joe Mangano, the leading experts. Certainly in the New York area and around the world, on the health dangers of radiation, especially the fallout from Fukushima, Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, and to refute this utter despicable nonsense being spread around by so-called climate scientists who claim that nuclear power is some kind of answer to global warming. Jeanette and Joe, if you'll forgive me, Joe just emailed me the link to a story I heard about and have since linked at nukefree.org, that's N-U-K-E-F-R-E-E.org, about the fact that the apocalypse has come to Alaska, the radiation being released by the thousands and thousands of tons of radioactive water from Fukushima, which of course the geniuses in the nuclear power industry are telling us it's not going to have any impact at all, has been detected on the coast of Alaska, which means it will soon be coming all down the West Coast. All these horrifying isotopes being poured into the water at Fukushima have already reached the United States and will continue to pollute and kill the Pacific Ocean and eventually all the other oceans. The fools at Fukushima, Tokyo Electric Power Company, the Japanese government, and now the American Secretary of Energy are standing by for the down-taking of 1,331 highly radioactive fuel rods from the fuel pool brilliantly put 100 feet in the air at the General Electric designed Fukushima Unit 4. The entire world should be waiting with bated breath for the full year, although they'll never do it in a year, but the year that they say, TEPCO says they're going to bring it down. There is no precedent for doing anything like this. The fuel pool at Fukushima 4 is damaged. There's debris floating in it. They poured in salt water at one point because the rods caught fire. The potential radiation releases of cesium from these fuel rods is 14,000 times what was released at Hiroshima. We're starting to get readings in the Pacific Ocean now that are equivalent to the readings of the early 1960s when the bomb tests were in full array, and at least we were able to stop the bomb tests. I don't see any evidence at all that TEPCO or Japan or the scientists of the world have the ability to stop the flow of radiation, radioactive water from Fukushima into the ocean. It is absolutely beyond comment. I mean, I got to say, you know, as I've been an activist for 50 years, you're always thinking about an ideal society, about social justice, about racial harmony, about acceptance of sexual preference and all the other things. But really, at the end of the day, what you really want to do is go to the beach with your grandchildren. And what these people have done with these nuclear plants is made that a dream of a bygone era. All our oceans are going to be too radioactive for even swimming, certainly fish, if this keeps up. And it will. There's no TEPCO, Japan, they have no answer for what's happening at Fukushima. The radiation is pouring into the oceans, pouring into the atmosphere, nonstop, no prospect in sight for these fools to stop this stuff. And it doesn't just threaten of all of us. It's already harming all of us. You cannot, in with any real good sense, eat Pacific fish anymore. Maybe another month or two. I'll ask Jeanette and Joe about that, actually. But let's take an inventory very quickly at Fukushima. I do have a piece up about this in my blog at nukefree.org and at Common Dreams. I guess it'll be picked up elsewhere, hopefully at PRN. Talking about what's happened at Fukushima, the major challenges we have at Fukushima now in Unit 4, you know, we had three major meltdowns at Fukushima, Units 1, 2, and 3, all designed by General Electric, by the way. These are not exotic Soviet reactors. These are American reactors. There are two dozen of them identical to Unit 1 in the United States, and many more very similar. So we have at Unit 1, 2, and 3, the cores have melted, and they are somewhere. It's just beyond belief to say this. The cores from these three nuclear reactors are somewhere on site. Nobody knows exactly where they are. Nobody knows how far they've melted into the ground. And in 2020, a mere 7 years from now, the company may go in and try and dig them out. So for the next 7 years, we don't know where they are. Put posters up for these three reactor cores missing. Where are the three reactor cores from Units 1, 2, and 3? Unit 4, there was an explosion. We're not exactly sure why. There were hydrogen explosions in 1, 2, and 3. This fuel pool, which does not have a containment over it. And remember, and Jeanette and Joe, I want you to comment on this. When Chernobyl happened, all the geniuses from the nuclear industry said, oh, Chernobyl didn't have a containment. Well, neither does any of the spent fuel pools in the General Electric reactors, which are about half the ones in the world, including the six at Fukushima, and especially including Unit 4, where the fuel pool has been damaged, has caught on fire, has released radiation. So we have the fuel pool flying in the air. We have the three missing reactor cores. We have thousands of tons of radioactive water pouring through the place every minute of the day into the Pacific Ocean, where the radiation has now been detected at Alaska. And in the midst of all this, four geniuses, so-called climate scientists, have come out in the Washington Post, it's actually in the AP, a general story, saying that the solution to global warming is more nuclear power plants. I mean, are these guys, what is it with these people? If they have knowledge about nuclear power, they need to go to Fukushima. These four guys need to go to Fukushima and solve the problem at Fukushima before they make any statements about how we need more nuclear plants on this planet. So that's my momentary rant. We'll get back into it. Jeanette Sherman and Joe Mangano, you are, by the way, if you want to call in, it's 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Joe Mangano and Jeanette Sherman are our wonderful guests. They are the leading experts on the health impacts of Chernobyl. But let's first talk about Fukushima. Joe or Jeanette, jump in and tell us, give us a little bit of your credential each, and tell us, please, will this radiation now detected off the coast of Alaska have any impact on our health?
Joe, you want to go first, or shall I?
Your call, Janet.
Well, of course it's going to have an impact on our health, but it's not just in Alaska. It's already been detected along the coast of California, and our next paper that Joe and I have done will show that it has had an effect, actually, already. But I have a friend who lives in Alaska, and he fishes, and he has sent me a number of emails saying he's very concerned because he doesn't know if the fish is being tested, and it should be tested. This whole issue at the University of Fairbanks is fascinating, and I hope they will release the levels that they've found, because I think, you know, anybody eating fish these days up there, or eating seaweed, which many of us like, is fraught with great health concerns. Joe, I'll leave it over to you.
Yeah, I'm going to add to that, and I, even though Harvey, I know your audience is very well informed. I think this calls for yet another explanation. Yeah, Fukushima is in northeast Japan, and it is. I'm on the East Coast, so what are we, about 8,000 miles away? It's a long, long ways away. And the tendency for any major media coverage of Fukushima has been in the area around Fukushima. We saw plenty of footage of, reactors exploding and of children being tested for radiation with these counters, and of workers, who look like spacemen trying to work in the plant and so on. Yes, we know that Japan is being exposed to high levels of radiation. But the key point here is that the damage goes far, far beyond just the area around Fukushima or even Japan. Radiation is actually a mix of over 100 chemicals that are not found in nature, but only created when you either explode an atomic bomb or when you run a nuclear reactor. They were released in huge amounts, I mean, just staggering amounts, in March 2011. They got into the air and the water, and they kept going. That's the key here. There was no lead wall in the Pacific Ocean. There's no lead wall built in the air around Japan. These particles and gases continue to move until they return into the human environment by precipitation and so on, and get into our food chain where we consume them. This is something that we've been doing for a long time, years ago with the atomic bomb tests above the ground, which ended in the 1960s, and for years, of course, with our routine releases from reactors. But this is something new. Along with Chernobyl, this is the worst meltdown from a reactor. And like you said, it left Japan, it's hit Alaska in substantial amounts. They're predicting it's going to be similar to the years of the worst atomic bomb testing. And, of course, it has hit the West Coast and all across the U.S. and all across the Northern Hemisphere as well. And there's going to be more coming. That's the thing. It just doesn't stop. So even though we may not be seeing, huge numbers of cancer cases or deaths now, unfortunately, we are putting poisons in our body now that will lead to this in the future.
All right, let's start. I'll get to you second, Janet, please. Let's go ahead and, Janet, what were you going to say first, please?
Well, the other thing is that we have to remember that all of this is being done without informed consent of anybody. And so when you go back to John Goffman, we know that this is random murder because we don't know who's going to be contaminated. The most affected are the unborn and the newborn and the very elderly. And then you're concerned about the workers that they have at Fukushima. And most of them are not being well monitored. And most of them probably don't know how hazardous the job is. We do know that from the, quote, liquidators, unquote, which was the men and women who were essentially conscripted to help cover up Chernobyl, that many, many, many of them and their children had serious health effects, not just cancer and birth defects, but other cardiac and immunological and reproductive effects. So we have the Northern Hemisphere essentially being subjected to a massive experiment sanctioned by the owners of nuclear power plants.
Right, except in an experiment, you actually follow up on the results. These guys aren't even doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what, as you say, what John Goffman said, is random premeditated murder.
Yes.
And I need you to comment now. Whenever we hear these debates with these geniuses from the industry, they say that the dosage is not high enough to harm you. So let's look at these dosages that we're seeing off the coast of Alaska. Are they, Joe Mangano and Jeanette Sherman, high enough to harm anybody?
Well, first of all, the easy answer to the question is any amount of radiation is harmful. Okay, obviously the higher the dose, the greater the harm, but there is no such thing as a safe level, and that has been not just an opinion, but has been proved through paper after paper after paper, and it's been published by a blue ribbon panel called the Beer Committee, BEIR, who concluded that there is no such thing as a safe dose. Now, as far as how harmful what's coming out of Fukushima is, again, it remains to be seen, but we are already finding evidence just 2.5 years later, which is very early in the game. A lot of casualties are going to occur, you know, decades from now, not just in Japan, but here in the United States as well.
Well, is there you've made this statement, there's no safe dose of radiation. What is the scientific basis for that? I mean,
thousands,
this is important for people to know, because
articles.
We hear this all the time. And I'll tell you what else we hear really quickly, Jeanette. Sorry, let me just – and you need to talk about this stuff we hear all the time, equating radiation exposure from fallout from places like Fukushima with medical x-rays and with flying across the country in an airplane. Every time I've seen one of these pro-nukers debated, they always equate – the radiation dose, no matter what it is, to flying across the country or living in Denver. So can you comment on that kind of stuff, please?
Well, the thing is, what we're talking about, apples and oranges, flying across the country, this is radiation that is essentially solar radiation, this kind of thing. What we're trying to talk about from Fukushima and Chernobyl and the nuclear power plants and the bomb testing are individual isotopes. As Joe pointed out, there are more than 100 that are new and unique. And these are taken into the body by inhalation or ingestion, and also on the skin, where they damage cellular parts of the body. Now, thousands of articles have been written, and I first worked for the Atomic Energy Commission in 1952 at the University of California. That's a long time ago. And we knew then that radiation was harmful. But when you talk about, quote, low-level radiation, you don't take into effect that the radiation continues day in and day out from various sources of food and air, and that these become accumulative.
Yeah, I would add to that. First of all, poison is poison, all right. Whether it's a high dose or a low dose, we're still talking about poison. And by many accounts, these are the worst, most harmful poisons known to humankind. Harvey, we know that in fact, when used in atomic bombs, these chemicals can destroy life on the planet Earth. All right, that should be enough of a warning. Thank goodness we never had a nuclear war, but we've known this for many years. Now we're talking about smaller doses, but it's still the same kind of poisons. And again, going way back to the 1950s, I mean, Adlai Stevenson, who ran for president against Eisenhower, called one of these 100 plus chemicals, strontium-90. Quote, the most dreadful poison in the world. They knew back then that this chemical, along with many others, when taken into the body in milk and in water and food, would go right to the bone and start damaging and killing cells and get into the bone marrow where the immune system's red and white blood cells are formed. There is no, when you fly in a plane, cosmic rays do not do this. When you sit on a rock which has natural radiation in it, or radon doesn't do this. This is something special. So dose for dose, these are extremely potent.
And what do they do? Jeanette, you mentioned the embryo and the fetus. What do they do to the embryo and the fetus in utero, these small doses of radiation?
Well, the dosage for a, several ounces beginning fetus and then maybe a 6 or 7 or 9 pound baby is proportionally greater than it is for an adult who weighs maybe 150, 180 pounds. And because the tissues are growing rapidly and in the unborn, they absorb these isotopes. One of the greatest of hazards is the radioactive iodine, which is taken up very early by the unborn in the thyroid gland. Also, these isotopes, as Joel pointed out, the strontium-90 is taken up by the bones. As we have already published articles showing that children born in proximity to nuclear power plants have increased levels of strontium-90 in their bones and teeth. The other isotopes like cesium-137 go to the muscles and the heart. And Bandashevsky, who was jailed, he was imprisoned for a prolonged period of time. When he showed that the cesium-137 was causing heart damage, first of all, he studied animals, and then he found the same kind of damage in children who had died.
It goes on and on. Joe, were you about to say something?
Yeah, I was going to add that we have taken, what we're talking about is theory, but Dr. Sherman and I have taken this theory and turned it into research. Pretty much within a year after Fukushima, we published an article in March of this year, which is the first I know of its kind that has looked at actual numbers of persons affected by a disease or died, and we selected the disease newborn hypothyroidism. We know that fetuses and newborns, as Dr. Sherman said, are affected worse. And that could mean more infant deaths, more stillbirths, more birth defects, more babies with thyroid problems, more premature births or underweight births, and so on. This is the only one where we had available data. The 2011 final data is still coming in. And we simply took a look. What happened in the 9 months after Fukushima? On the West Coast compared to the rest of the country in terms of the rate of babies born with an underactive thyroid gland, which is strongly linked to radiation. Well, we found that there was a 28% increase in the three West Coast states and Alaska and Hawaii compared to almost no change for the rest of the U.S., which got radiation but in much smaller amounts. We're about to put out another journal article, Open Journal of Pediatrics, that is going to uphold this using more current data. And we also put out an article using just rough estimates of total deaths in the U.S. We estimated that in the 9 months following Fukushima, an additional 14,000 to 22,000 deaths occurred for all ages. We're awaiting the final numbers, which should be quite soon, to see if we're right. But I've looked at a couple of the West Coast states, and sure enough, unusual increases in 2011 occurred after years of decreases in the death rates. So I think we're going to be upheld. Obviously, a lot of things can cause people to die, but when you add a shot of these deadly poisons, that must be considered as one, maybe even the primary cause.
We're talking with Jeanette Sherman and Joe Mangano, premier health researchers on the health effects of radiation, giving us the beginning, just the beginning, of the bad news about radiation releases from Fukushima. We have a caller, Harvey from Berkeley. Harvey, what do you got for us?
Hi, Harvey, and hello, Jeanette and Joe. Thank you for everything you're doing. You're so right. There's one thing that I never hear mentioned. I live here on the West Coast, and I saw this article that said that the plume, you've said it's already arrived, but at that time it said the plume is going to arrive in 2014. Well, that's just when they're opening up the new desalination plants in Carlsbad. And I wrote a letter to Dr. Helen Caldicott asking her, does radioactive material get through the desalination plants? And she said, yes, it does. And so, so the desalination plants up and down the West Coast, people are going to be drinking radioactive water.
There, if I can respond to you, Harvey, there's actually a desalination plant that has been proposed on the Hudson River in just north of New York City, 3 miles away from the Indian Point nuclear power plant. And there is a you can look it up on the web. There is a war going on about whether or not to build this plant. People are quite concerned. So it's not just West Coast.
I get thirsty just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's horrifying. We're talking with Joe Mangano, Jeanette Sherman, and Harvey now from Berkeley. I should point out, by the way, there is a chance of shutting Indian Point, all you New Yorkers. The Indian Point, owners of Indian Point Energy are being confronted with the demand, which we hope the state of New York will stick to, that they do once through cooling, that which would force them to build cooling towers, which they do not want to do. And hopefully that will shut the plant. That did result in a firm deadline for the shutdown of the Oyster Creek plant in New Jersey, and hopefully, and possibly Diablo Canyon, actually, on the coast of California. I think people have to understand about Fukushima that it is not a worst-case scenario. Yes, we had 3 reactors melt. Yes, we had 4 explosions. Yes, we have a spent fuel pool 100 feet in the air with 1,331 fuel rods. And yes, we have thousands of gallons of radioactive water pouring into the ocean. But it could have been worse. If the earthquake that hit 120 kilometers off the coast of Japan had hit underneath Fukushima, we'd be talking about a smoldering ruin of 6 reactors where no one could go, no equipment could enter, and the radiation would just be pouring out into the air, even worse than it is now. Go ahead. Harvey, is there anything further you wanted to tell us about? We're going to have to take a break here. In Berkeley? Harvey, are you gone? Okay, we are back. We're going to take a short break now. Dana Lyons is going to sing us the Rocky Top version of the Solartopia song. Jeanette and Joe, we're going to come back and talk about Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, and the basics of what we can expect in the future from Chernobyl. Stick with us here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show.
Coal plants, new plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Solartopia is home sweet home to me.
Solar, okay, lots of forests for the bears. We hope there's a lot left for the bears. We hope there's something left for the bears. We're talking with Joe Mangano and Jeanette Sherman, two of the greatest experts we have on the impacts of radiation on the general health. And it is not a pretty picture coming from Fukushima, to put it mildly. Joe and Jeanette, in the previous half hour, you talked about health impacts you've already witnessed or established scientifically on the west coast of California from Chernobyl. Can you compare this, please? You've done a tremendous amount of work on Chernobyl and the impacts of Chernobyl. I want to say very quickly, by the way, the government of Japan, which we have considered a democracy all these years, this administration is very pro-nuclear, Prime Minister Abe, and he is about to force through a state secrets act that will make it virtually impossible to get reliable information about Fukushima out of the country. And essentially he's going to turn Japan into a model of the Soviet Union without the social programs. And I have to say, so thus far, and you can contradict me you feel I'm wrong, Joe and Jeanette, that Mikhail Gorbachev, the prime minister of the Soviet Union, was way more open about Chernobyl than Abe is being about Fukushima. Is that an exaggeration?
Oh, I don't think so at all. And I think that there's generally a pretty much a blackout on either publishing data on regard to radiation or news stories in this country about radiation. I mean, it's very hard to get out to get out any data.
I'm going to add to that by using the Chernobyl example. Again, the Chernobyl meltdown occurred in 1986 when the Soviet Union was still a communist state. And for a few years, there was almost no research or information that was allowed to be circulated. But then the Soviet Union fell several years later. Communism collapsed, and the current model took place. But even then, literally a muzzling of any objective research continued for a lot of years after Chernobyl. The number 31 was used, and 31 was the number of liquidators, you know, the emergency workers that were killed very quickly because of these huge radiation doses they received, trying to bury the burning out-of-control reactor. So that's what we heard. 31 died, 31 died. We'll go forward 20 years almost, 2005. There was a conference in Vienna, I think in anticipation of the 20th anniversary of Chernobyl. And several groups, the World Health Organization, the IAEA was there. They made a presentation, and they concluded, based on their quote-unquote research, mind you, no articles published in medical journals, that there was going to be 9,000 cancer deaths because of Chernobyl. And I'm going to hand it to Jenna from here, because several years after that, in 2009, a marvelous book on the true harm caused by Chernobyl was published. Jenna, do you want to take it? Because Jenna is the editor of the book.
The book was written by Alexei Yablokov, essentially, who was head of the Russian Academy of Sciences under Yeltsin and Gorbachev, and also by Vasily Nestorenko and Alexei Nestorenko. It was published by the New York Academy of Sciences, who originally priced it at $150 a copy, which did somewhat limit its usefulness. Dr. Yablokov was able to get back the right to have the book published, and we were able to get it printed at $10 a copy. It's also available on the internet for free download.
What's the title?
Pardon me?
What is the title so that people can look it up and Google it?
The title of the book is Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. And it's now been published in Japan, in Japanese, and obviously in Russian. But we're talking about hundreds and thousands of deaths as a result of Chernobyl. But one of the most horrifying aspects is that they have the government of Belarus, which received a massive amount of the radiation as it flowed north from the Ukraine across Belarus, that only 20%, that's 20% of children in Belarus are considered healthy. That means that 80% are not well and have physical and emotional and mental problems. So exposure to radiation has doomed this culture, this country, to great harm.
Yeah, just so I just want to add a number, Janet.
Yeah.
The book said 985,000
yeah.
deaths, literally a million deaths were caused by Chernobyl, only in the first 20 years. And since then, of course, it's now seven more years, the number has increased. Instead, as compared to the measly 9,000 number that the World Health Organization came up with.
And it's still leaking. I mean, although they've tried, they're building a, quote, sarcophagus over the top of Chernobyl, it still isn't finished. And the bottom, it has no sarcophagus, and it still leaks.
Well, we're talking with Joe Mangano and Jeanette Sherman about the health effects of radiation, including Fukushima and Chernobyl. Let's talk real quickly now about Three Mile Island. Did you look at any of the impacts of Three Mile Island in your research?
Janet, if I may start.
Yes, please.
Yes, we have. Because, again, rather than go right to the research, I'll just tell a brief story about some of the shenanigans that went on at first. 1979 was the Three Mile Island. It was not a full meltdown, but it was a partial. At least half the reactor core melted down.
All right, let's stop right there for a second. The reactor unit 2, Three Mile Island unit 2, melted down on March 28, 1979.
Right.
It had only been operating for about 3 months.
Right.
So thankfully, the radioactive burden inside the reactor was not so great, certainly nowhere near as big as Chernobyl, and way, 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 way smaller than what's at Fukushima. Now, the government and the industry said that the amount of radiation that escaped was, on average, the equivalent of a chest X-ray for everybody in the area, which utter nonsense. They still have no idea how much radiation escaped from Three Mile. And Joe and Jeanette, I don't know if you know, but I did go to Three Mile, to Central Pennsylvania the year after the accident in 1980, and I interviewed people, and I got to say it was the worst week of my life, at least until Fukushima happened. People were, you know, dead, dying, sores in their mouths, hair falling out, emphysema, stroke, the beginnings of cancer, just a horrifying experience. So whenever you hear that nobody died at Three Mile Island, everybody should know it's an incredible lie.
Well, incredible lie, Harvey, penetrated the research community. I mean, or more should I say, was mandated by the research community. 12 years after Three Mile Island, there were zero journal articles looking at a very basic question like, what were the changes in infant deaths near Three Mile Island after the meltdown? What were the changes in cancer? None. But 31 articles had been published in journals like Journal of Psychology and Stress and Journal of Trauma, examining the emotional problems that Three Mile Island had inflicted. Now, the first article that did look at cancer came out 12 years later, 1991, by a team from Columbia University. They found that within 10 miles of the plant, in the 5 years after the meltdown, a 64% increase in the number of people with cancer was found. But they went further to say it wasn't due to radiation. It was due to stress. Then a group from the University of North Carolina took the same data, reanalyzed it, and they published an article and said, you guys are wrong. It is radiation. And a fight broke out in the medical journals. I mean, some terrible, terrible things names were called by the Columbia people who insisted radiation hadn't done anything. So what we see here is a tremendous failure on the part of the research community to give accurate and timely information about, you know, what was the probably the worst meltdown in the United States.
Yeah, and of course, to this day, they deny that any radiation escaped to speak of and that anyone was harmed. But there is no official monitored record of how much radiation did escape at Three Mile Island or where it went or who was affected, who ingested it. The company did, as I recall, put out ads in the local newspapers equating the amount of radiation that escaped from Three Mile Island to the equivalent of a chest X-ray, failing to note, as I'm sure you, Joe and Jeanette know, that Dr. Alice Stewart, over a 30-year period from the 1950s to the 1980s, clearly established that a single X-ray to a pregnant woman will cause a double leukemia rate among the offspring.
Oh,
isn't
yes.
that correct?
That's correct.
And so, you know, basically they were telling you, they didn't tell you directly, but that if you lived in Three Mile Island and you were pregnant, they had just doubled the chance that your child was going to have a case of childhood leukemia.
But interestingly, Harvey, I think even though such tremendous efforts were made to minimize and negate any idea that Three Mile Island could have harmed people, there were no new nuclear reactors ordered after Three Mile Island. The number of new orders had been dropping in the 1970s as it was, but once Three Mile Island occurred, they stopped for 30 years because despite what is in medical journals or not, people, and including people on Wall Street who lent companies money to build these reactors, were convinced that these were dangerous and they had harmed people.
Yeah, not only dangerous, but uneconomic. We do have four new reactors allegedly under construction here in the United States, two in South Carolina and two in Georgia. I will take Las Vegas odds with anyone that they will never be finished. They're already uneconomical, having been outstripped by solartopian sources, solar, wind, tidal, geothermal, ocean thermal, biofuels, increased efficiency, all that stuff. And they're already experiencing huge cost overruns and delays. We're talking with Joe Sherman, Joe Mangano, and Jeanette Sherman on radiation and health. What do you expect in the future now from Fukushima? What will the effects on Japan be like, and what can we expect here in the United States?
The problem is there's almost no funding for independent researchers or anybody who wants to look at the effects of what's going on. And who knows what's going to happen if the nuclear industry can spend enough money to tell anybody don't worry about a thing, then I think we're doomed. But we need funding for independent researchers and university researchers. I mean, nobody wants to pay anybody to go to Fukushima and collect data or go to Chernobyl and collect samples. I mean, it's very extremely difficult. One of the few groups that's been doing any of this is Tim Musso from the University of South Carolina, who is an absolute brilliant researcher who's been to Chernobyl, I think, 30 times and Fukushima 5 or 6. Who's not studying humans because nobody's releasing the data, but he has looked at insects and birds and plants, and they're finding that, you know, they have a very short lifespan, and they're finding changes already in the birds and the insects and plants as a result of both Fukushima and Chernobyl.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, I agree with what Dr. Sherman said, and I'll add to that that however hard the efforts are to keep data away from researchers, many in Japan and in other countries, thousands, perhaps millions, are going to suffer and die from the health hazards of Fukushima fallout. It's as simple as that. We don't even know because, as Harvey, you've said, that the plant is still not controlled. And the releases are still going on today. And for how long, we don't know. How much, we don't know. But much like Chernobyl, despite all the naysayers saying, no, only 31 died, we now see the number at past a million now of deaths. And I'm sorry to say the same will happen in Japan. What I do think we'll have, just so that this is going to be a negative thing, is that I have grave doubts whether Japan will ever operate another nuclear reactor again. There are 54 in the country. They're all shut now and virtually have all been shut since March 2011. The government certainly wants to restart them. However, unlike in this country, in Japan, the people have absolutely had enough and have taken to the streets in large demonstrations to block it. And I don't think an administration like the Abe one in power now will try.
Well, I think they'll try. The question is whether they'll succeed. Abe is extremely pro-nuclear and certainly wants the public to believe that there has been no harm from Fukushima to anyone. And he is also passing, with strong majorities in both houses of the Diet, a State Secrets Act. The New York Times managed to editorialize against the State Secrets Act. The Times is generally okay on civil liberties, but they did this whole editorial on it without even mentioning Fukushima, which is astounding to me. But, you know, as I recall, Mikhail Gorbachev did allow the world to know what was happening at Chernobyl, and we're certainly not getting that kind of cooperation from TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, which has been accused by the governor of the state of Kashiwazaki of institutionalized lying. Now, this is critical because Kashiwazaki has a site with seven reactors that were severely damaged. Well, many of them were severely damaged by an earthquake earlier this century, and the Abe administration wants to open those. Astounding. I hope you're right, Joe Mangano, that the Japanese public will not let any more nuclear reactors open in Japan, but it's not a done deal, that's for sure.
No, and in other countries too. Germany has closed half their reactors since Fukushima and is planning to close the rest in 10 years. Switzerland also has a program to close. And even here in the United States, five, just this year, reactors have announced they will close.
Yeah, well, it's great to say that, you know, we went, Richard Nixon in 1974 said there'd be 1,000 reactors in the U.S. By the year 2000. In the year 2000, there were 104. Now we have 100. And next year, when Vermont Yankee shuts, it'll be 99. But that's still 99 reactors we have to deal with, half of which are General Electric design, which have these fuel pools flying in the air and are certainly vulnerable. They're old. I mean, 13 of them, or rather 23 of them, are the same design as Fukushima 1, which dates back really to the early 1960s, for God's sakes. I mean, I drive a 1991 Volvo, and that's considered almost an antique now. And you know, these things are falling apart. So what do you say now, what are you telling people about the coming of radiation to the rest of the United States, including the East Coast? What is your prognosis?
Well, the Earth turns, as you know, and if a radiation cloud rises into the air and the Earth turns underneath where that radiation is, it's going to be precipitated out in rain and snow. I mean, this is a determined fact. This is nothing new.
And the other problem, Harvey, is that in today's food chain, unlike years ago, when people, you know, grew their own food and ate it, a lot of our food comes from elsewhere. And, you know, if you're talking about seafood from the Pacific, it's quite a serious matter. And let's not forget California, the San Fernando Valley, I believe, is the source of 70% of fruits and vegetables. My numbers may not be exactly correct, but a lot of our fruits and vegetables come from California, all right? They just send them around the country for consumption. And, of course, if the soil has been contaminated by Fukushima, it gets into the plants, to the fruits and vegetables. So this is certainly again, the levels are much lower than in Japan. However, when you continue to consume these day after day after day, the risk goes up and up and up of cancer and other diseases.
Okay, we're talking with Joe Mangano and Jeanette Sherman. I want to point out that on Thursday of this week, November 7th, a group of us will be delivering 150,000 signatures at the United Nations asking for a global takeover of the site at Fukushima. We are also probably going to march on CNN, which that night will air a movie, the nuclear industry's very own Triumph of the Will, Pandora's Promise, in which Helen Caldicott, Amory Lovins, Ralph Nader, myself, Bobby Kennedy, Jane Fonda were all portrayed in as unflattering a way as possible without ever bothering to interview any of us. Instead, some other people were interviewed who claimed to have been anti-nuclear and have seen the light. It's kind of like watching a movie. I did see it. They refused to send me a review copy, but a friend of mine got me LinkedIn, and it was kind of like watching a Disney movie, about the great promise of new reactors that do not exist. So, but at any rate, 1 o'clock, if you're in New York City, we're not having a rally. It's just kind of an informal gathering at the UN to turn in these petitions. We're going to continue gathering signatures to petition the UN to get a global group of scientists and engineers to take over at Fukushima. God knows the TEPCO and the Japanese government cannot handle it. We have about 4 minutes left, Joe Mangano and Jeanette Sherman. Tell me, please, what kind of response have you experienced personally and professionally from the publications that you've done showing health damage from atomic radiation?
Well, my own experience, and people who really understand the science, and which is, not all that complicated, there's support. People who don't understand it and think that dinosaurs walked the Earth 5,000 years ago just think that we should go and open all the nuclear power plants that we can. But I want to thank you, because we need to get this message across the entire country and mobilize people to get all nuclear power plants closed immediately. And I thank you for any help that you're doing and any information you're getting out. Every nuclear power plant needs to be closed.
Well, I agree entirely. And actually, Greg Jasko, the former chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, agrees with you about the current generation of nuclear reactors in the U.S. Joe Mangano, what do you got to say about that?
Well,
what kind of reaction have you been getting?
Well, the kind of reaction, first of all, is I believe that more education is needed. People do have concerns about nuclear power, but they need to know more specifics, not just about meltdowns, but about the routine releases from reactors that we take into our bodies every single day.
All right. Well, with that, Joe, unfortunately, we're pretty much out of time. It's been very enlightening. We could easily go another hour. But I want to thank you both for your incredibly brave and difficult work, making it clear to the world that Chernobyl did, in fact, kill 1 million people. And please keep up on Fukushima. It is beyond horrifying what's going on there. And your work exposing the health impacts is going to be an essential part of dealing with this apocalyptic crisis across the ocean. Thank you very much, Joe Mangano. What is your website? Where should people go to see your work?
Oh, thank you. Our website is www.radiation.org.
And mine is www.janette.sherman.com. And please send us the link to this program so we can put it on our websites.
I will indeed. Thank you very, very much for honoring our air. This has been another week of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Next week, I'll be in the studio in New York City after delivering our petitions to the United Nations. Thank you for being with us for another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. And come to nukefree.org, nukefree.org, to see all the latest postings on the stuff you really don't want to read about Fukushima. Take care, folks, and we'll see you next week.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from...